Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Good morning. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4. Text me, call me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. That's my email address. You can write me, say any old thing you want, within reason, of course, but I guess you could say anything you wanted. We won't track you, we promise. All right. So I hope you had a good day. I was going to continue on with our conversation of yesterday, but I think I'm going to change things up just a tad. And there's a reason for that, because I do have an ongoing discussion with the Holy Spirit. No, you know what's not even ongoing discussion. It's kind of it's a clause that never gets revoked. And that is, okay, Holy Spirit, whatever you want to come through my mouth, for whatever reason, even if it's just for me to fall flat on my face or for me to hear something myself, or I always go with what those veterans told me a long time ago when I made my film with those two veterans. If one person benefits from what we do, then it's worth it and we'll do it. So that's kind of one of the pact I made with the Holy Spirit a long time ago. I thought, you know what? I like what they have to say, and I'm going to take their words, and I'm putting it to you as my own little prayer. So I oftentimes will begin researching or continue researching, and then I'm led down a different path. Now, we can call that lack of focus or easily distracted, of which I can be all of those things. But today, I want to talk about shame. I want to talk about shame. I want to talk about guilt. I want to talk about unhealthy shame versus healthy shame. I want to talk about why do you feel the sense of shame and what it does to your mental health. So if you have any thoughts or any comments, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, text them or email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You do not have to be on the air. You do not have to give your name. You can be anonymous. Your voice usually, my voice doesn't sound like my voice, evidently, over the air. So if you were to meet me in person, I probably wouldn't sound like this, how you're hearing me now. So go ahead and give a call. Do you feel shame? Do you feel guilt? Do you feel condemned? And who's doing that to you? Why do you feel that? Is it shame for something that is so horrendous? I've known, I've worked with people who have killed other people. And I've watched them over a period of years, no matter how they suffered inside, I watched their redemption happen before my eyes. So shame can be cleansed. Guilt can be cleansed. Condemnation can be cleansed. So, but I see people, and I've done this myself, who are so filled with a sense of shame, guilt, and self-condemnation. And when you really ask them about it, there really isn't any explanation for it. They were taught, or they began feeling that intense, intense shame for just when they kind of shrugged their shoulders, well, just for being me. And we as Catholics can actually foster that perverted sense of shame. We have reasons we feel shame, guilt, and condemnation. Animals do not feel that. But we do. Now, we can say an animal feels that because we look at their little look on their face when we catch them at something. They have their own set of animal emotions. But I doubt they sit there. I see no evidence of birds sitting there and saying, oh, I should have built that nest over in the other tree, and I'm such a bad, bad bird, and I just don't know what to do, and I'm just, you know, and they feel so guilty, they get paralyzed, and they fly from tree to tree, and they don't know what to do, and they're afraid of all the other birds because they're building better nests than they are, and they're just, you know, all shriveled up inside, and they're just sitting there beating themselves up, and they're going to their bird equivalent of confession and confessing the same thing over and over and over and over again. I'm not making light of that. I've confessed some sins so many times. It's like, you know, it's ancient history, and I know that it was forgiven, but it's like, oh, well, yeah, but there's this other part of it you don't understand. You know, when I was 13, you know, it's like, that can happen. We can get into this thing. And when I worked with a lot of people with eating disorders, what do they all come down to? After you go down, okay, what do you see when you look in the mirror? Well, I see a fat person. What do you see when you see other than the fat person? What's behind the fat person? Well, an ugly person. What's behind that? What's behind that? What's behind that? What about your cells? What about your organs? What about, you know, where? How far down are we going to go? Where, keep going, keep going, keep going. And it always goes down to, I'm defective. I'm just defective. Now, in Catholicism, we acknowledge that right off. I sin. We go to Mass. I have sinned in front of everybody, I'm telling you. And what I've done and failed to do, I have sinned. I've sinned. I've sinned. I've sinned. And then we take that to mean I'm bad. I'm bad. I'm bad. Only God can cleanse me. But then when he cleanses me, I don't feel different. So therefore, and I'm going to just mess up again. So, you know, I must be a bad person. I'm born bad. Those are connections that we have gotten throughout some period of time. Was this from the beginning of the church? I don't think so. I'm not a church scholar, so you log on to another program for the actual theological ideas that started out from 1 AD or all the way up. I don't know. But I do know there's periods of time, and how do you ever get away with that? I mean, look at, and I'm not making any dissertation. I'm going to talk about Pope Francis today. I'm going to talk about guilt, shame, and condemnation. I'm going to talk about how that messes up your mental health if you have continual self-shame. I'm going to read you a definition that comes from, I don't even know where it comes from. I think it says a Bible studies website, but I couldn't find the person who wrote, but it's their interpretation. It's rather evangelical. And so I'm not really going on that. I just like what they said about shame. And then I'm going to also read you the definition of shame as well. So before we break for this first segment, let me just start off and just let this roll around in you. The person that wrote on this Bible studies website says, they're talking about shame. They quoted Jeremiah. And this is about how I think the whole gist of this is how you probably should feel some shame and then what you do about that shame. But this is how they describe shame. And it was their description. It was not an actual definition or an etymology. They said, shame is an intense feeling of angst that makes you wish you could evaporate. Extreme humiliation and remorse. A despairing of life from abject embarrassment. And then they distinguish that from guilt. Guilt is realizing you have done wrong, usually for some particular sin. And number three, condemnation is being sentenced, convicted for doing wrong. They go on to write, I don't know if it's a woman or man, shame is deeper than guilt. It is not based on having done something wrong so much as a soul ache of being wrong at the core. Shame is more piercing than condemnation, where the reality of judgment is mentally apprehended from an outside arbitrator. With shame, we palpably feel our own depravity in vivid self-realization. With this, and then they go on to ask about with this definition, what could possibly be the benefit of shame in the lives of the redeemed? Should its debilitating presence be given no quarter, or does God use it, even require it? Is it a pity party or the Holy Spirit's doing? Now, I didn't go on to read their ideas about this, not because I think that I don't even know who this is. I just happen to see it as I'm looking up the definition of shame. And they have a lot of biblical quotes. I don't know what their main thesis is going to be. But I think they start off with this great distinction, shame, guilt, condemnation, and talking about this, that we have a palpable ache, soul ache, at being wrong at the core. And I guess the question I have is, are you really wrong at the core? And as I mentioned with a lot of people that I swear almost everyone, when I would ask that question in the eating disorder inpatient clinic that I worked at, the words were, I'm defective. I see a defection. I see something defected. I see a mistake was another thing. So they're looking in the mirror, and when you strip away all the other parts, and again, this is a mental disorder, and it's a mental disorder that gets to the point of psychosis sometimes. So this is a very serious. This is not just someone being concerned about their body or wanting to be thin. This really gets into a place where they cannot, they've lost the ability to control, to where they are in danger of death. So this is very serious. Eating disorders are. It's not just something we say, oh yeah, they're anorexic or they're, you know, whatever. This is very serious, and it produces a lot of guilt and shame, especially bulimia. We're not talking about eating disorders today. And if you think you fall in that category, you need to get some professional help. So I'll just set that out there right now, because you're going to go through all kinds of mental gyrations in your mind and continue thinking it's okay, finding a way to make it happen. All right. So, but the bottom line is they exemplify, a lot of these people I worked with exemplify what we do all feel, and I think has to be at some level at the root of a lot of our mental anxieties and our mental depressions, feeling that we are wrong at the core. And what's wrong with that? Well, we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. What's appropriate shame? What's appropriate guilt? What's appropriate condemnation? And how that all works. We'll pepper in a little bit about Pope Francis too on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.
And opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle. I'm your host. We are walking, even though I'm your host, we are walking this life together. Totally. Yes, I have training. Yes, I can tell you certain things. I can tell you things out of the DSM-5 and 4. I can tell you all kinds of things about different kinds of psychotherapies and psychoanalysis. I can tell you things about medication. I can tell you things about homeopathy. I can tell you things about the medical world and the medical field. And all that's fair game if you want to ask me. My role here more is that I am bringing this part of me to the table, all of me, me as the person who's broken and wounded and messed up and been around the block way too many times, and as the person who brings to the table some knowledge and education and years and years and years and years of one study, one area, another. I have a very eclectic background, so I bring that too. You do as well. You don't have my background, so you look at things. I was listening to someone yesterday who actually, y'all should really listen to her, Lori Desatel, I think her name is. She was on Leo Brown's Almost Hour yesterday, I think yesterday. Lori is her name, L-O-R-I. I think it's I can't remember. I'm sorry. I can look that up over the break, though. And she's all about education, you know, primary education, or actually any kind of education for kids, especially primary education. And especially, she's very, very specific about education. And I at first thought, well, you know, I don't have any little kids to think about their schooling or standardized testing. Well, when you listen to someone else, it's Lori Desautel, Desautel. And if you want to scroll and look over at breadboxmedia.podbean.com down to Leo Brown's Almost Hour, and just look for her name, because she's in the title or in one of the bullet points. She said a few lovely things that were about life and that were life affirming. She wasn't saying I'm talking about life now, because what she was describing was about how we limit children in our educational system. And as I'm extrapolating that, not only is that absolutely true, but it's not limited to. It's like includes but not limited to. That's a huge way, that's a lovely way to put includes but not limited to. Means that, yes, I'm acknowledging, but it's not just limited to that. And what she was saying is that we do things so very differently. And sometimes the things we do that are against the rules, she gave an example of someone who brought, as she said, literally a 7-course meal, almost, and just one little snack after another out of her satchel. And she did it in such a way that the teacher never even noticed. And she said that girl broke the rules, period. She broke the rules. However, as an educator who knows how tattered and shattered the educational system is now and what we do to our children because they don't fit into the little shattered pottery shards of our educational system, there's no room for anyone but who's going to pass the test and what test are they going to pass and why they're going to pass it. And that's it, because that's how we get funded. We get funded from the main government by making sure that we have X number of people passing X number of tests. That's it. There's no room for the artist, for the Mozart, for the Picasso, for the St. Thomas Aquinas, for the little Teresa. You know, there's no room for any of those people. There's no room for any of them in our current system. And so what do? We take, I'm getting way off the subject, but in a way not, because it instills that sense of that I'm defective, right? So what does it do? It takes these little children and says, oh, okay, well, you can't fit into this little 1-inch by 1-inch shard over here from the broken vessel that we used to call education. So you probably need some drugs, because see, you can't fit into this. And you're irritated and agitated. And so therefore, since you don't fit into this shard and you're not vomiting out the standardized test in the way that I'm asking you to vomit it out, and we're not going to let you run around the schoolyard and be silly or be funny or be mean and scrap it up and then get punched. I mean, I don't like bullying. I hate bullying. But the point is that pretty soon we're going to just bring our kids in like little cotton straitjackets to school, and it's going to go in and go out, and that's it, and that's school. Now, it's not that bad. Obviously, we have lovely, wonderful, wonderful people, young people, kids, all over the place. But we do limit our children. And there are many out there we do not need to drug. But what message are they getting? I came out of the womb defective. I must have some bad genes in me. We talked about that yesterday. We talked about that the day before. Look at my podcast. These all run through a theme, even though I tell you I'm changing the subject. I'm not really changing the subject. This is an ethereal sine wave. You know, you ever saw that in school? You know, the waves. We have mathematical waves. Why do we have waves in math? What's math about? You know, it's supposed to be one, da, 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 da. Just little linear things that we see. No, there are waves and patterns and this and that. And yesterday's discovery is today's discarded theory. We are constantly in motion. We are in transition. We are in transformation. Always, always, always. We never stop. But if you can, I mean, let me back up. You can stop somebody and you can stop yourself by the deal breakers, by the limitations, by the I'm going to take that shackle, thank you very much, and I'm going to slap it on my own wrist, my own leg, and then I'm going to get the ones that are chained to the brick wall. That's what I'm going to do. And those shackles I have in my mind, in my life, are my shame, my guilt, my belief that I'm defective, the belief that I can't do any better than I've ever done, the belief that my dad did it this way, so I'm going to do it this way, the belief that I am cute, that I'm pretty, I'm funny, I'm this, I'm that. Because once that stops, once you're not cute anymore, or once you start to see wrinkles, well, now who are you? Or if you keep on this, like I talked about the eating disorder, to the point where you're in a place where you're going to probably not make it. You could literally die. Now you, at that point, have almost given up without knowing it. You're sacrificing. Your body is now catabolizing itself. It's like cannibalizing on itself. And so it's doing all kinds of weird things in your brain. And so therefore, you look in the mirror and you really do see these things. And it doesn't matter how you're standing next to a human skeleton who is with tubes all over them and is just about ready to die. What they see in the mirror is a fat person. They just do. I can't experience that. And I've had people tell me they can sit in a group of other anorexics and or bulimics, and they can see very clearly the other people and their problems. They can clearly see that person is a skeleton. This person over here is not making sense. Binge purging or however it is. But they cannot see it. And they've said, but I don't see it in me. I can't look in the mirror and see anything but what I see. So are you there? Are you where you can't look in the mirror of your own soul and not see anything but what you see? And if there's the answer to that is yes, then you are squeezing out God. Are you hiding behind a cloak of false shame, false guilt, and self-condemnation that was handed to you by either the outside world, by your Yahoo advertisements or whatever they call the news that's really an ad? Are you hiding behind that? But not because you want to, but because you don't know any other way. Do you just feel shame? Like when I say the word shame, do you go, yeah, I really feel ashamed. If you do you feel ashamed on any given day in the definition that this person gave that I still don't know who they are? Shame is an intense feeling of angst that makes you wish you could evaporate. Extreme humiliation and remorse, a despairing of life from abject embarrassment. You ask a lot of people who are depressed, or a lot of people who have free-floating anxiety or panic attacks, a lot of them, not everybody, but a lot of you will say, I just feel embarrassed. I just feel embarrassed about me. I don't want anyone to know me. Because if they knew the real me, they would hate me. If they knew the real me, they would hate me. Does that ring a bell to you? 573-4BREAD-4 or DM live at breadboxmedia.com. It's a little embarrassing to even admit, of course. But I hear that all the time. Pink. I always go back to Pink. Writes a song about that. She talks about that, you know, and it's something, and one of her little punchlines is, it's bad when you annoy yourself, you know, but it's about that feeling that you are bad and you need to take something, a pill to make you someone, please let me be someone else. It's a whole theme of her song. She, you know, I don't want to see me. I don't like me. But if you're in that, you can be free of that. And we'll talk about that on the other side of the break as well. This is Dr. Michelle. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Michelle. We're walking together. You're with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BRED-4. 573-4-BRED-4. You can email dmlive at breadboxmedia.com. Now I have a plethora of saints I can bring into all this, and a lot of Catholicism peppered in here and there, and biblical references. And I want to reassure you and let you know, as I said in the beginning of this program, one, I'm not a theologian, as you already probably guessed, and I'm certainly not a church scholar, but I know canon lawyers I go to sometimes and ask questions, and I know people that are pretty awesome that I ask questions when I have them. And there's lots of different contributors on Breadbox Media that, man, you can just get something for everybody on there. It's really great. You can get the most orthodox to the most unorthodox, and it's really, that's why I'm on it. I like it. I believe in it. And I wouldn't be on it if I didn't. I was on a different radio station, and then on both of them for a while, a long, long time ago. And I just couldn't go there. I couldn't go with the philosophy, I suppose, or there was just something that didn't ring true, didn't ring authentic to me. And I don't need to do this. I mean, it's not something I need to do. I would love to do it. I'm drawn to do it. I'm driven to do it. So it's a beautiful thing. Beautiful? That's a great word. It's beautiful. It really is. And it is for me as well as you. And as well as, to further whatever plan, as I enlist over and over again from the moment I laid there in bed as a little tiny kid, 7, 8, and scooted over every night for Jesus to come and lay down with me, and found one day a thorn in my bed, a rose thorn in the morning, sticking into me. And I was sure that Jesus left it. And from that to, running away from home and, being pregnant at 19 and going to medical school and all these things in between, and having divorces and marriages and, things like that, and coming back into the church with shock and awe and not a word. I mean, I really didn't think, oh, I think I should get back. It was like, no, you're coming back. And here's how we're going to do it for you, Michelle. It's a very different way than for a lot of people. Well, God goes to where you are. If you're the one that's how you need to get back in by reading and by doing this, that's who you are and should be celebrated and happy. And if it's someone like me who needs more of the neon lights and angels dancing on a pin and people kind of floating in and out of life and very weird things, we'll talk about that some other time, coming at me, that's what it is. So I do really pay so much homage to my Catholicism, to my, no matter how much and how I can tell you stories about nuns. I'm getting way off, but it's fun, so I'm going to do it. I can tell you stories in my Catholic school in second grade of nuns coming around with matches, and we had to hold our fingers in the match to feel what hell would be like. And of course, I had to be super cool, and even though I was in second grade, because even then I needed to be tough. I don't know why I felt I did. I needed to be tough. So I made it a point to keep my finger in there longer than anybody could. And my finger burned. I mean, the skin was like melting. And so for whatever reason I did that in second grade, I did that. But that was part of my upbringing. Do you think they would do that now? Of course not. Is that rigid? Is that over the top? Would that be considered horrible abuse right now in this day and age? Yes, it would be. It wasn't then, because they were coming from wherever they were coming from. Just like people, our pioneers used to have on their fireplaces water jugs with a lightning sign on them, which signified, and maybe it wasn't the pioneers, but it was a little after that, but would signify some of the early people here, radioactive water. Because once they realized something was radioactive, they thought it was healthy, and they drank it. You know, and I'm laughing, it's not funny, but it's because we only know what, and what are we going to find out in 10 years from now? You know, here we are buying all this bottled water. It's filled with BPA. That's a hormone disruptor. And so now we have some bottles without BPA, but what are they? So what are we going to find out about those? We don't know. All right, end of rant. Let's go back to shame. I found the Pink song and the Pink lyrics, and the Pink song is Don't Let Me Get Me. So I'm going to read you Pink. I'll just take her little punchline. She says, never win first place. I don't support the team. I can't take direction and my socks are never clean. Teachers dated me. My parents hated me. I was always in a fight because I can't do nothing right. Every day I fight a war against the mirror. I can't take the person staring back at me. I'm a hazard to myself. Don't let me get me. I'm my worst enemy. It's bad when you annoy yourself. So irritating. Don't want to be my friend no more. I want to be somebody else. I want to be somebody else. Then she goes on to say, I'm just read the whole thing because it's fun, but it's so true. LA told me you'll be a pop star. All you have to change is everything you are. Tired of being compared to, and then she uses an expletive, Britney Spears. She's so pretty. That just ain't me. Doctor, doctor, won't you please prescribe something, a day in the life of someone else? Because I'm a hazard to myself. Don't let me get me. I'm my own worst enemy. It's bad when you annoy yourself. So irritating. Don't want to be my friend no more. I want to be somebody else. So I'm reading that certainly not as Pink sings it, but thank you, Pink, for writing these lyrics. She's written several of girls, about girls who are brought up wanting to be someone they're not, or being, or squelching who they are in favor of the outside. She's got one called Stupid Girl. Same thing. Showing this little girl in her video with little pigtails, and she's got a little football, and she's watching all this stuff on television, and pretty soon she's part of her song and part of her video. She's in an OR getting plastic surgery. And she's saying, what's happening to all these women who wanted to be president and wanted to do this? You know, what are they doing now? So the point of all this is that where did that come from? Now, yeah, you can look back and say it came from a broken home. She talks about it on her videos, on her interviews. A lot of these wonderful, wonderful, beautiful artists, they come from very broken homes. And just like anything else, someone can say, well, I came from a broken home and I'm not that way. Well, great, because that's what your neurobiology and your neurochemistry and your personality and all the things that make you you, that's how you went. But the point is you, part of that drives you. Now, we can't roll back anything, and we can't undo the vapors, and we can't change things. But then we wouldn't have Pink. Even if she is tortured, I don't know. She may be, she may not be. But she's speaking a word that everyone here can identify, at least at some point. We shake our heads because we say that's a natural part of being an adolescent, is being that way. But some people, and most people these days, take it to the extreme. Now, we can also get where it's not about accepting yourself in the mirror, and that doesn't mean you just let everything go because you don't care. But what I'm bringing out for this program is the fact that somewhere along the line, we incorporate very extreme, inappropriate, damaging shame to where we are, as Pink said, a hazard to ourselves. We're our own worst enemy. And we start annoying ourselves. So in other words, again, go back to that evangelical. You can't get much too different from pink and an evangelical. That evangelical dictionary talking about pain being this extreme angst over extreme self-embarrassment because you feel wrong. Your soul has an angst. It's crying out because you're wrong at the core. Pink is saying the same thing. She's looking in the mirror. She can't stand it. It's a war every single day, and she can't take the person looking back at her because she just doesn't like herself. And that goes against God. It just does. Now, it's not that Pink does and I don't, or that the evangelical does and I don't. We all do. But what happens then if we get caught in this kind of like, well, then that's holy if we keep feeling this. There's a difference between sinning, saying, oops, I sinned, I was wrong, I will accept. Remember we read about that from the big book, the AA big book, about acceptance. It's the answer to all of my problems today is what it said. When I am disturbed, it's because I find some place, thing, person, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation exactly as it is supposed to be in this moment. Nothing happens in God's world by mistake. And then they go on to say that I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. That doesn't mean getting your bad self good. What it means is that to understand that we are God's children, we were made in his image and likeness, we have free will, and we do things that are against nature and against supernature. So in the next segment, we're going to wrap this up and bring it all back home. I am Dr. Michelle, 573-4BREAD-4. See you on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you are with me walking this road, Dr. Michelle Live. This is our last segment, so lest you think that I'm saying that there's no room for shame, which one of you thought, I understand how it sounds like that. Yes, there's room for shame. It's something, you know, all these things, there's nothing new under the sun, right? Nothing new under the sun that was reflected upon thousands of years ago. And if you think there was nothing new then, then whoa, you know, there's a lot behind us that we don't even realize. Have you ever, one fun thing to do is you Google like, you know, Ladies Home Journal or Vogue or to its very beginnings, and you realize back in the 1800s, How to get the best figure, how to get the good skin, what kind of diet to be on. It's all the same stuff. It's just we just look different when we're doing it. We don't look that different. All right, so let's go by and let's define, as I stumble over my words, let's define some natural and good shame. Is there good shame? Well, of course there is. Someone who has no guilt, no remorse, no shame, no propensity towards self-condemnation. The other end of the spectrum, I was talking mostly today about the end of the spectrum where you have this free-floating shame for something you don't even know why you have it. You've ingested something. It's like you ate something and it grew inside of you like those little watermelon seeds or something. Those way back when there was that little cliche about it. I think it was about pregnancy, actually. But so, you know, that's what happens. The little seed you ingest somewhere along the line. Maybe it's a breakup of a family and a child only thinks, well, of course, it's because I'm so awful, or they'd be together. Or, you know, they were together until I was born, then I was born and everything was bad. Or, you know, if my mother started going downhill and started getting sick when I didn't win the prize at the piano competition. Little kids, we all put things, we put two and two together and come up with four that makes sense to us, but it may not really be four. So we only can grab from the information we have, and you have limited information and limited ability to process that information when you're four. So why did I bring in about the educator? Why did I bring in about pink? Why did I bring in the evangelical? Because everywhere you look, everywhere you turn, why do we talk a lot about saints? Why do I quote the scriptures? Because it points down, that's our big distillery again. We keep putting it through these giant vats and all these coils and all these little evaporation processes. And what comes out is a drop. And the drop that comes out is pretty much the truth. So we have to look at the fundamental truths. We are natural. We are not supernatural. And we're not preternatural. And by being natural and being creations, being created, we have supernatural in us. But it's not separate. It's within. It's not plopped in and then taken back out again. You can't separate it. Now, we can either desecrate that, or we can nurture it. And oftentimes, but we only have so many natural tools to do it with. So if we steal something, you steal something, and you feel bad, but you don't give it back. Yeah, oh, that's wrong. And then you go to a conference or something and they're talking about, you know, the somebody taking, you know, Kleenex or something, and you start to feel embarrassed, like, oh my gosh, somebody's going to find out. And then you have an opportunity to go, you know, this just isn't worth it. I'm bringing back the Kleenex. And you bring back the Kleenex. Well, you've done that in an appropriate manner, just like with sinning, because you're not going to not sin. You're always going to sin. Sinning, confessing, because all you're doing is that you're trying to, it's like washing your hair. You're taking out all the product out of your hair when you wash your hair. So if you put on leave-in conditioner and some, you know, scrunch stuff and some mousse and some this, that, maybe some, a little bit of color highlighting. And then over a period of a couple days, your hair is feeling like something that doesn't feel like hair. And then you cleanse it. Or maybe you need a clarifying shampoo, our confession. And we strip the hair of all the product that has been accumulating and sticking to each other. So that 2 months ago, you might have used this conditioner and it deposited something. And then a month goes by and you try the next best thing that's going to make your hair gorgeous. And you try that, but then something feels kind of gummy. And so it's stuck to something else. And then you try a leave-in. Then you try a soft to the touch but firm hold. And then that sticks to something else. And pretty soon, like using five different kinds of wax on your furniture, you got a big gunky substance. And so we clarify it. And clarifying, you cannot clarify something you can't understand. So if you understand, you know what tool to use to get rid of it. You don't go get furniture polish to make your hair better because you understand, okay, I got a bunch of junk in my hair. I got to get it out. Hey, this says it'll get it out for me, so I'll try that. And you try it and it works. So you do that over and over and that helps. But where we go awry is where someone told us, no, you use Pledge on your hair. Yeah, that's what you do. You use furniture polish on your hair, and that's going to really fix it because that's what we always done in our family. That's what we do. That's what you all do. And then you keep using it. It gets worse and worse and worse. But then it's like, well, I just must have bad hair. I just was born this way. I'm just a mess. And pretty soon, you are shameful, embarrassed to go out in public, and you don't know what to do, but you really don't, you've gotten way off track. So when is shame a good thing, and how do we tell the difference? Well, there are many scriptural things to lead us in a direction, but when you have people who stand in front of truth, I'm looking at something else here. Here's a great sentence. Shame is a godly motivator. A virtuous life shames the ungodly, proving a context for evangelism. That was from Titus and Peter. A believer's shame for past sin is a spur to forsake sinning. So if you have a little bit of shame, like the example that I had for you, then you can rectify that. So shame is something that there's a reason for it. It's a clear reason. You can look at it and you can rectify it. And it works. You may still feel kind of funny about it and hope that nobody knows that you use furniture polish on your hair. But if you have a little bit of guilt, so you have a little bit of shame, you kind of shame a little embarrassing because you thought, oh my gosh, if anybody sees that I use furniture polish on my hair, they're going to think I'm really, really dumb. Well, that's appropriate enough. Don't go any further than that. You have, your guilt, a little guilt in doing something. Maybe it's, whatever it is, it's definable. And you don't want to self-condemn. That's not for you to do. What you do is it's recognition, not condemnation. And shame is maybe momentary, but it's not something to dwell in. Because when you get cleansed, you're shameless. There should be no shame. Because notice shameless, that doesn't even make sense. What do you mean shameless? Should I be shamed? No. No. Can you be shamed? Certainly, as an adult. Should you be ashamed for who you are? No. No. Not at all. You can be ashamed for the bad things you've done that have gotten you in the boat you're in right now. Shouldn't have done it that way. But you know what? You got to go back and you say, just like someone who's, a teenage pregnancy and they have the baby and it's a hard life and it's 30 years down the road and they realize that they've, had a couple husbands, they're just total mess. Oh God, I wish I would have done it differently. I wish I would have just found that man, gotten married, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? Think back. Because if you would have done that, that baby would not be here. That human being would not be here today doing whatever they're doing, going on their path. And even if their path's messed up right now, take heart. Because God makes all things new. All things new. But no matter where you are on your roads, you probably would not be in a situation. And if you are, you need a little bit of extra help on that one. You wouldn't be in a situation where you would say, well, yeah, but I would have them disappear. I would have them disappear. Now, I'm going to just give a little caveat because my heart always goes out to people who feel like they're in the margins, like people who have actually killed people or people who've had abortions or people like when I said that before, like in war or whatever, or people have done really dire things. It's for you too. It's for you too. Because no, maybe you made the choice that the child isn't here right now. When you did as a teenage pregnant person and you didn't know which way to turn, but you have the opportunity now to see that all of the steps, every single person and all their choices make the fabric with which the new world can come about. And even in our mistakes, we can enrich the world if we do not allow ourselves to be hogtied with shame, inappropriate shame, and inappropriate guilt. Because you either believe that all things are made new and you get cleansed, or you don't. Well, this is Dr. Michelle. It's really good news. Email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can always, 24 hours a day. And you can walk with me every day on Dr. Michelle Live. And thank you for walking with me today. See you tomorrow.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.